Hello, my fabulous radio listeners, and welcome to the first and most exciting sex talk of the new millennium. We've been in a concrete bunker deep beneath the Ozark Mountains for the last 4 weeks, and boy, are we glad to be out. Lance's stale jokes and flatulence were getting a little bit hard to deal with, and
my BO was under control, though, right? That's what you kept telling me.
I mean, that's due to your diet of potatoes and chickpeas, which, of course, was all we had other than the jerky in the bunker. I mean, I think it was the sort of homemade deer jerky that was causing the kind of problem gastrointestinally.
Well, the only way to find out for sure is to go back to the bunker for another 4 weeks and do tests.
I think it was condemned.
we're excited to be back in this brave post-apocalyptic new world to discuss with you issues, elements of sexuality, issues regarding sexuality, and, of course, as always, the sexual macabre. Tonight we've assembled a roundtable group of Pittsburgh's most talented and gorgeous gay men. And the topic for tonight is homosexuality throughout the ages.
Before we really get into it, though, I should point out that if you are homosexual or have an age and would like to talk about it, feel free to give us a call here.
Either
or. 621-9728. And secondly, how are we going to refer to you tonight, host with the most?
Well, it's actually an excellent question, Lance, and I think that in our time together in the bunker, I think what happened was we became more empathic about each other's needs. And I don't know if it was that or the constant anal rape that brought us closer.
Oh,
but,
no.
Well, one or the other. I felt that somehow I think we have a closer relationship. And I had a lot of time to think, and I was thinking that the reason that I'm not successful in the sexual and relationship domain, I used to think it was because I was old, unattractive, and bitter, but in fact, the real reason is I'm a badass.
Mm. Wait, did you say you have a fat ass?
well, only if you mean PHAT. Kind of choked on that joke that was coming up. So, you know, there are other people in the room.
Wait, oh, you know. you mean badasses and look at me wrong and I'll my initials BA in your face.
I'll gut you from stem to stern. What's that? I'll gut you from crotch to
gizzard.
I'm always a gut you like a crotch
to gizzard.
But, well, I mean, why are we doing all the talking when we have so many people who could comment intelligently on your success or failure as a gay?
We have 1,000 points of gay light here. We have gay men from every point on the gay spectrum. From the delicious, who's the young? I think Tom.
I'm the youngest.
You're the youngest little plum on this tree.
I love the youngest
plum. Corey is youth obsessed.
And going all the way to Jeff. I think Jeff.
The ancient one. You may
be old Greek.
Now, even though you are ancient, you're not wearing your glowing robes and your
the force is with me.
Medallion of reverence.
That's right.
Jeff.
Well, it's interesting that you used to say that Corey,
DJ Badass.
Sorry, DJ Badass is age obsessed because, you know, being the token straight guy here, a large part of my opinion of homosexuals is formed by DJ Badass.
Oh, right. God.
That's not good.
Well, that's what my therapist keeps telling me.
I think you're going to have to be unbrainwashed from potential.
So
damage.
I think it'd be interesting to get a sort of a roundtable opinion on just how gay obsessed gay culture is and how gay obsessed Corey is. Sorry, DJ Badass.
Hang on.
You mean youth obsessed?
Well, age obsessed.
We still need to introduce ourselves yet. Before then we can do that.
Sure. Please. So on one side of the couch we have always surprising, always entertaining, Tom and Andrew. And even though you seem to be cuddling with each other, you're not actually together. Is that true, or are you?
Tom and Andrew.
No, you're right. We're not together. No.
Tom and Andrew.
Wow. We just played on the radio.
Right.
And although Tom is the youngest, I look the youngest.
That's true. I would have.
That's true. It's the beard on Tom.
Well, it's not, Tom doesn't look young, but he looks
more mature.
You've got the boyish thing going. Yeah. You have the sort of elf. Peter Pan.
Yeah, he plays that.
Which,
and I play it up.
As much as he can.
You know. So Tom is 20, and how old are you, Andrew? Oh, a girl never reveals his age.
No, she doesn't.
Okay.
Old enough.
And on the other couch.
Older than you think.
Okay. I'm Chris, and I've been on the
the show before, and I'm 25. Midlife crisis.
Oh, no.
I'm 38.
And who are you?
I'm Jeff.
He's my bookie.
He's your bookie?
And he's my bookie. My little sweetie. Oh. Oh.
Pookie.
If anybody in the audience needs to throw up at any point, please call.
Do it. 621-9728.
So you're not his bookie, and you don't know the line on the Super Bowl then, right? Because I've been wondering. Okay.
Pookie. Go Rams. Okay. Okay, someone so, think of something to talk about real fast.
So age obsession, youth obsession.
Yes.
DJ Badass.
Yeah.
I mean, I can speak to this issue a little bit because I think that I have, you know. Because
you're old.
For better or for worse, my personal taste appearance wise are for the younger, more youthful appearance.
That means me, Andrew.
Yes, that means you, Andrew. Although it's interesting because there's a dichotomy here because the kind of person that appeals to me personality wise and relationship wise is a more mature person.
Like me.
Like Andrew, me.
Well, more like Tom. So I think I would. I mean, hypothetically, what would happen is that I would be in a relationship with Tom. And he would be supplying all the love and affection. And then I'd be involved in occasional degrading acts with you. You'd be in a cage in my basement, you know, covered with whip marks and sour cream. Whipped cream, you know, whatever. So
yogurt.
Dairy products of every kind. So I don't know what – I mean, that's not really particularly uncommon. I think lots of gay men – I mean, I would even say the majority of gay men kind of seek the younger kind of crowd, I guess.
Is that true?
That's, it is fact. That's, I think that's true, but it's not as true as it's supposed to be.
Okay.
It's like, it's the fashion to be attracted to younger men. Youth is everything. Youth, you know, young people are beautiful. It's all part of the youth-obsessed culture that started in the 60s. And even though all the young people who were in the 60s are now in their 50s,
mm-hmm.
you still have marketing and television that's all aimed at, you know, 20-somethings. I'm attracted to attractive people.
Right.
You know, and to me, I mean, guys aren't, I mean, their bodies aren't done developing, and I do, you know, watch this very carefully.
Very.
Very carefully. Yes. I mean,
www.troll.com.
Oh, no.
Exactly. That's it. No, I beg your pardon, young man.
Whose bodies are
we're for snappers? Yeah. So at what ages are you talking about when you talk about?
Okay, man's body is not done maturing until he's about 28. You know, it takes that long for the shoulders to properly fill out. You know, I think guys don't start looking, how should I say, you know, down to about 23, 24 is okay. But younger than that, I mean, the guys, I mean, maybe pretty, maybe beautiful, maybe even attractive, but I think, you know, he'd look better in a few years.
You're like a man rather than a boy.
Exactly.
See? It took you all that time to say that, and that's all you had to say.
You got it.
See, I don't think that's necessarily true. At least, I mean, maybe I'm speaking just for myself, but the way I have seen it historically, it seems to me that for gay men, when you're younger, you're more attracted to older, but then as you get older, you get more attracted to younger. It kind of switches off. Mm-hmm. It's pretty much the opposite of wherever you are.
Mm. Well, then there'd be no single people. I don't know. There's like a way. I don't know. Well, I went through my young stage.
That's not really true. I mean, there's still the ugly factor.
That's true. If you're ugly, you ain't getting it.
Pretty much.
Why?
Unless you find another ugly, then you're getting it.
Right. And then you don't hear anything about that.
Or unless you drink a lot.
Good God.
Which is why everyone in here stumbled in.
But there's one thing that young people, an advantage that young people have over older people.
Stamina.
We can talk about that later.
Well, yeah. I mean, there is that somewhat.
Hair.
But
hair.
Haven't had time to ruin yourselves yet, basically. I mean, people usually just don't take care of themselves. You know, they eat pizza all the time, sit in front of the TV, don't work out, so on. You know, and when you're under 25, you can do all that stuff. You can drink all the time and not sleep, and you look fine, and you're healthy, and, you know, it's no problem.
But there, it's good. But, like, as long as you have to take care of yourself.
Oh, absolutely.
After your metabolism leaves.
Absolutely.
There, it's good. But, like, as long as you have to take care of yourself.
Oh, absolutely.
After your metabolism leaves.
Absolutely. And I think...
And your youth. I mean, just your general vigor that fights off that.
Well, yeah.
It's not just metabolism. It's not just fat. It's just like, it's like if you're drinking and smoking for 15 years of your life, you can tell. Like, it starts to really wear on your physical appearance.
Right.
And also your emotional ability. And in terms of if you're looking for a relationship with somebody who maybe, you know, spent a couple of years high or drunk, you know, if it's a couple of years, sure, then maybe it was just their little experimentation phase. They've been doing this for 15 years. Maybe it's been a little bit more than experimentation phase, but maybe it's really part of their lifestyle, and there are going to be issues in terms of...
See, but again, as an outsider looking in, it seems I get the impression that gay culture is almost gym obsessed, right?
Oh, yeah.
Right, and which it says to me that sort of any gay man that wants to get laid a lot is going to spend time in the gym and is going to look good, right? And is going to
or plastic surgery, liposuction.
Right.
Yeah. You know, that's you a really it. Easy way to sit on your ass and still look good.
Those are, I mean, I just want to. Liposuction is still imperfect technology. I mean, I think we have to wait another 10 or 20 years before lipo and plastic surgery are really good techniques. I mean, I've looked into this. I know.
You can't really remove the cottage cheese.
It leaves marks.
Well, yeah.
You have to decide whether you want to look in good.
Couldn't those marks be misinterpreted as some sort of S&M experiment?
Yeah. Well, yeah, so long as the S&M experiment involved cottage cheese, I
think it's really
good. Well, clearly, in
I never want to get old.
In the, like, gimp in the box in the basement scenario, there was yogurt all over him, so why not cottage cheese?
That's definitely, like, my worst fear is, like, getting old and not taking care of myself and not being attractive.
Well, so last time you were on the show, you were eating a box of donuts from Entropy. Right?
I'll
have
to try to eat that whole box.
Yes, you did.
Taking care of yourself or not?
I don't think that...
He's matured, like, since then.
Yeah.
And Andy can afford it.
I was just saying, I don't think I need to worry about that right now.
That's actually a dirty little secret that the health people don't want you to know, is that if you start taking care of yourself, you know, by your mid-late 20s, you'll be fine. You know, I mean, you'll be 95%.
Then I have plenty of time to worry about that.
But it's the good habits today.
That's true. That's true. If you've got a certain lifestyle, you'll be set in your ways, you know, after 7 years, 8 years of doing it, and then it's hard to change.
But, one thing that I guess just sitting here and listening, all we've really talked about so far is physical appearance and how you look and how and what good shape you're in and the speed of metabolism. And I think we're kind of perpetuating that obnoxious stigma that gay culture revolves specifically around physical appearance.
You go down.
And that's a really obnoxious stigma.
Is there something else?
There is something else.
There's definitely something.
There's plenty beyond that.
I was actually involved with a man who was 34, and he looked fine and everything like that, but he was stable. He didn't have, like, issues to deal with. He didn't have rancid ex-boyfriends that I had to deal with.
That I had to sit next to in class.
Yeah, exactly. You know, that I had dated before. Right. You know, all this stuff. And it was nice to actually, like, just sit down on the couch. I don't have to worry about trying to act, like, be young all the time and actually have an intelligent conversation. That's the big one. Intelligent conversation.
Mm. Well, if you, as a young man, can have intelligent conversation, aren't there other young men that can have intelligent conversation?
Not many.
Well, I'm sure there are.
But they're not as wonderful as Tom or I.
Exactly.
I mean, yes, I would say that there's a lot of gay stereotypes, but all stereotypes do come from certain elements of observation and truth. And there are a lot of, just as there are a lot of boring straight people and vapid straight people, there are a lot of vapid and boring gay, twinky, straight boys and girls. Gay boys and girls. And I guess it's just, maybe it's just that... You know, maybe I'm digging a hole here. But it's like in terms of, that's the whole idea. At least in terms of what I found in terms of, like, looking at the gay population in my generation over the years, is this: I have had a hard time finding somebody that seemed like intellectually interesting to me that wasn't interested in doing the bars, doing a lot of people, you know, as many people as possible, talking about clubbing, talking about dancing, talking about all this stuff, which is, you know, it's great and it's fun and. You know, and I'm into all of that stuff too. But when it really came down to it, it was like you can't really have a mature conversation about politics. Can't just spend a Saturday cooking. You know, can't just relax. You know, have to be doing gay stuff.
you know. It's like,
you know, at some point you're just like, can't we just have, you know, relationship? Can't
it's true, and that's really unfortunate.
It is.
And that's
it
very
is.
Common.
And I think that...
Do you think there's pressure within the gay community to have the gay stuff lifestyle? Is
oh,
that
yeah.
where you think it comes
oh, yeah.
from?
Yeah, I mean, in fact, I think you're kind of almost a... You can be perceived as a failure in the gay community if you're not doing the gay mm-hmm. things in certain circles. I wouldn't say, you know,
so
at all.
I don't agree with that. I would think that you would be revered if you were able... I know amongst my friends, if I was able to sit down and just have dinner and not go to the clubs, I think my friends would see me as very lucky. I think there's also something that to be said about, like, the generational differences.
Mm-hmm.
I was lucky enough to find someone that was... We could have certain things in common and stuff like that. But I see that there are times, even with my roommate here in college, like, there's, like, 5 years between us because I'm a senior, he's a freshman. And there are times when he will mention something and I have no idea what the hell he's talking about. And it's a generational thing, and I had never even, like, realized that before.
Is he gay or not?
That's a whole other question.
Not gay yet.
Next right. subject.
Right. This ain't 2020 here.
Wait, so what sort of things does he mention? Like fishing techniques?
Christina Aguilera.
Yeah, Christina.
Yeah,
works
yeah,
for
like
Christina
Aguilera.
Backstreet
yeah.
Boys.
It's interesting. Chris says that about his generation. I'm annoyed with guys who are about my age or older. I'm right on the line between baby boomer and Xer, officially. In the cultural lexicon, but a lot of guys, the guys who are older than me, they really came out or they grew up in a much more repressive world than even it, that I came out in, and it really leaves scars, I guess. They seem to have problems, or they're 20 years.
Oh, I'm sorry, that's a bad word on the air.
Oh, sorry.
Okay.
20 years.
Oh, I'm sorry, that's a bad word on the air.
Oh, sorry.
Okay.
Silly.
Nutty things.
Silly things.
Silly things.
Bad things.
And, you know, I want to be with someone who's alive, who's vibrant, who's doing things, interested in the world, and so on. And there are people, there are old people like me who do that. But people who are 25 or younger or so sort of, are that way because they have to be, you know.
But at the same time, I feel extremely lucky as a gay man to be a member of the age bracket and the generation and the time that I'm in now. I would much rather have been born, you know, in 79 as a gay individual than 59 or 49 as a gay individual. And I think, you know, that's the one silver lining in the whole experience is that Andy and I are able to be growing up and be ourselves in a time when, to a pretty decent degree, there's nothing wrong with that. And I think
in
that's
this
a
city, and we're in this part of the city. Too.
You're right,
I mean,
but
we are living in a bubble.
Exactly, but in a more global sense.
Yeah.
And just
that's
like,
okay, because that's where we are right now.
Right,
exactly.
and like every
there is that bubble.
Right.
That, you know, and it's not just in the Hate, or it's not just in, you know, in Greenwich Village,
and
I think
right, and I think that the bubbles that we're living in are a lot more accepting and are a lot bigger and more common than they were. One generation, two generations ago.
It's funny, because I would have thought just that things would have been very open in the 70s, and then there would have been a backlash in the 80s.
That's exactly the way it was.
Right. And so men who would have come out in the 70s would be pretty relaxed about it, right?
I didn't come out in the 70s, though. Okay. I came out in the 80s.
But you had sex with men in the 70s, though.
Yeah.
So did the population.
Right. Having sex with men doesn't necessarily necessitate coming out.
It was closeted, you know, or it was kind of teen.
It did a lot of strippers.
But mm-hmm. also... In the 70s, early 70s, I was in my teens. I was in a hippie school out in the middle of the woods,
yeah.
You know, definitely a mega-liberal subculture.
Mm-hmm.
But even during the liberalism of the early 70s,
mm-hmm.
there was a lot of official homophobia. I mean, people were not talking about gay rights in any serious way. And it was kind of phony. I thought a lot of things were phony in the 70s.
And so you think the changes that have happened sort of post-80s have been sort of deeper and have reached farther into the institutions of
I'm
the
amazed every day
really?
At just how laid back people are in this decade, in the 90s.
Well, there's that, but there's also the sort of multiplicity of actual ballot initiatives
yeah.
designed to fight sort of the spread of gay rights, right? So,
But there are even things. There are things that the two of us do, like perfect example is my office Christmas party. I took Jeff to my office Christmas party as my boyfriend, and most of the people in my office knew my ex-girlfriend, and I kind of had to come out to the people who didn't know the fact that I dated a guy before my ex-girlfriend. So it was like very, very confusing.
I bet your
situation.
Ex-girlfriend's a real happy girl.
Actually, she is, and she's bisexual.
That was perfect.
Exactly. No, it's a one big happy convoluted family. Okay. And so I mean it was something that even the two of us talked about in terms of like 10 years ago would we have been able to do this? 20 years ago would we have been able to do this? No way. Absolutely no way. Without, you know, seriously absolute silence. And there were people there who didn't know, you know, and I would just introduce Jeff as my boyfriend and they'd be like, oh, you know, people from very conservative backgrounds, people with, you know, decorated military careers and just saying, oh, great.
Well,
you
I think
– and part of that is the university and the fact that, you know, a lot of the people in my office are academics and whatever. But at the same time, part of it is a real cultural shift where it's finally kind of okay. Like even if you don't agree or don't approve, at least you can sit in a room and have a conversation with somebody and not be like – okay.
Well, I think it's just like any other sort of minority movement, mm-hmm. you know, from black rights to feminism to anything of that sort. I think that for the most part, I mean, it's a hard road to walk and it's a struggle and it's a battle, but over time it really doesn't do anything but get better. I mean, if you look at the history of it, the history of homosexuality in society for the past 10, 20, 30 years and seeing the progression and seeing how different it is now than it must have been back then.
They actually had on the New York Times or whatever, some newspaper, I got it, Kivahan, they were showing how on the Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, there was actually like the gay couple that embraced after the guy like won $1 million, you know, and there was no negative responses like sent in, you know. Wow. So, and they thought that, I mean, that's amazing. That show was watched by 28.3 million people.
28.7 million who were white trash, too, so.
Yeah. You know. So that's a pretty,
pretty
big
good.
Step.
You're on our ABC syndication deal here, man.
Yeah, so.
I was uncalled for. I'm sorry.
I've actually been pretty impressed in that show in particular. That the guy you're talking about actually only won $500,000.
Oh, I'm sorry.
But there have been two or three gay men who have introduced
probably.
Their partners yeah. on the show, and they'll show, like, the camera go to their partners, and they've been sort of cool about it. And it's actually,
I'm surprised they do that. I mean, that would have been unthinkable a few years ago.
Right. And so
we're surprised, but yet.
And they said in the article that they don't give any, like, there's no, like, label to it. I mean, it's just the person, you know, they're there with, they don't ask any questions, you know. Yeah. And they're there to play a game show.
Right, and so we just introduce the person as their partner. Like, mm-hmm. this is Rick and his partner, you know. Serge. And,
actually, did you want to give that phone number out again?
Yeah,
badass?
Of course. 621. Write this down. Get your little pencils out and write this down. 621-9728. If you have a problem remembering numbers, it's 621-WRCT.
Young queens. Old queens. Call. Well, I actually have an interesting
straight
segue.
Straight boys that are
too.
Needy.
Right. Exactly. Speaking of age brackets and like when you were able to come out, I mean, DJ Badass has actually heard this story before, but my coming out story to my parents was fun and unusual because they came right back out at me when I did it. because I'm gay, and they're like, "Well, we're gay too." So
what?
God.
Well, I mean, basically didn't say it in so many words, but said basically, you know, well, we're bisexual and. My poor sister, who's a breeder, sitting there at the table going, ah!
Could
no,
you imagine?
No.
That poor girl.
No, it was, yeah, exactly. She felt really out of place. We still accept her in the family, even though
she's heterosexual.
Exactly. But basically what they have said in the past is, you know, you're really, we are jealous. You know, it's hard for us, you know, it's not hard for us to have a gay son. It's hard for us to look at you and look at how happy you are and look at all of the freedoms that you're able to have. Because we grew up in a time and we lived in a time where, you know, A, total family
ostracism.
Yeah, thank you. Like, just it would have been cut out, absolutely cut out. They would have, you know, basically professionally jeopardized, and my father was a minister, you know. I mean, all these things, like, they just, I mean, there was just no, absolutely no way.
It's almost a retelling of the traditional American dream, though, the poor immigrant family that scrimps and saves for their children to be able to go to college and have the things that they never did, writ, you know, large and sexual politics.
To some degree, I mean, that was actually a big thing. Like, in my family, like, you could say any swear word in the book growing up, but if you said the word fag, forget it. Like, you were going to your room. It was a serious taboo. And, like, we never really understood it. My sister and I were like, God, Mom and Dad are, like, fag obsessed or something. But it was, like, this. That was the dirty word. It was like, no. Exactly.
I think that's why even now when I mean, because I think it's pretty easy for anybody of any age group to once in a great while feel some level of self-pity about the whole gay thing. I mean, sometimes it is frustrating. It does get you down and you feel bad. But when I think about it, I really also have to look at the fact that, like you were just saying, it is a much more laid back and easygoing time, and it's something that society makes it, in a lot of ways, a lot easier to deal with. Mm-hmm. I mean, I haven't come out to my family yet because I still feel like my family is one of those cold Irish Catholic bitter families
like
that would
know.
Right.
thanks, Andy.
Get
the clue. Come
right, right, but. But like I said earlier, I still do feel fortunate.
There's just something here I've been thinking about for a while, and I don't want to derail the conversation, but I don't really understand it. I mean, you're talking about, you know, about the ideal gay person as someone who's a little bit older, maybe a little bit overweight, has accepted his homosexuality.
What?
Okay, whoa,
wait, back the train.
And
somebody,
you know,
with a badass.
Right. Here I am, right? I mean, I'm like your ideal dream man, and yet you're not.
It all boils down to you every time.
This is the same conversation we had just a few months ago.
Jump on you.
Well, I mean, you know, logic. I mean, if you respect your intellectual abilities at all, I mean, it's
but the truth is, it would be the same answer you'd give to anyone, male, female, gay, straight, anything. It's a matter of timing, being in the right place at the right time, meeting the right person. That's all it is.
And the fact that this is a scheduled time,
that is a
cheapens the situation.
Yeah,
I mean, we can all admit that we've had fantasies about having sex with DJ Badass, I think. I mean,
now is that literally true?
They don't maybe...
Really?
Maybe involve, you know...
Maybe nightmares.
Yeah, well, I mean, they might not be pleasant fantasies, but I mean, they're certainly. All right. Well, maybe that's just.
Oh my.
Well, so I think the real question here is he doing? Is DJ Badass doing anything wrong?
By what?
Just by being.
See, I'm surprised.
Andy. Andy, do you have anything to say?
Do you have a boyfriend? Do you have a?
DJ Badass, please, is my preferred.
Well, I say it.
I do have, yes, I have been in a relationship for the past almost 6 years now.
Then what are you complaining
about? What's the problem?
Well, I need a little action on the side. I mean, the thing is...
Oh,
does your partner know about this? Well, he does now.
The thing is, I want to be able to be offered these opportunities. Even
that's true. Just having the option available, even if you don't necessarily
go
for it.
I would decline them. I think maybe that's where it's going.
And my boyfriend and I perfectly agree that we don't have a 100% monogamous relationship. We've decided that if there's a very special situation that you need to take advantage of.
So basically, if you're horny and he's not there.
That would be a special situation.
Yeah. That would be a constant situation.
I don't agree in the ideal of monogamy qua monogamy as like 100%, you know, ideal thing. Like, I just think if some like total dreamboat walks into your life and you just need to
get off,
have sex with him as some kind of sexual release valve, you know, who am I to stop my boyfriend to, like, you know, let's say Jonathan Taylor Thomas, who, by the way, he's going to be on a gay...
He's 12 years old.
He's not 12 anymore. He's like...
He looks 12 years old.
I don't even think he has pubic hair.
He's going to be playing a gay teenager on Showtime on January 29th.
That's scary. I know someone who has a sick obsession with Jonathan Taylor Thomas, and that makes me seriously question his character.
He's like, he's in Tiger Beat every week. Give me
pictures in his room, for God's sake.
He's super hot.
Gross.
Ew.
So,
but see, that's the
so
whole,
much
like,
respect.
That's the whole problem with gay, the whole stereotype. You, like, you are
obsession
the stereotype.
With twinks. You,
you
are.
Are
you are perpetuating,
perpetuating
this miserable propaganda.
And then from your trash,
you're turning. We are the babies of your trash.
We're trying to make a better life for ourselves and be like,
we are going to have to clean up the pieces of this miserable stereotype.
Do you have, like, a favorite member of the Backstreet Boys? A favorite member of 98 Degrees or whatever the hell?
Actually, my preferred
boy band.
Do you
prefer Christina Aguilera or Britney Spears?
That's a tough question. I'm going to reserve my comments. So I want to go back to something that you said.
Wait, no, trust me. He has something good to say about
that. Let's see what he has to say.
My favorite boy band is actually Boyzone, which is actually a British boy band.
Yes, and they're gay.
Well, one of them is Stephen Gately, was outed last year. And
is that why they're your
his
favorite?
And he's actually the cutest one. Actually
really are they as gay as, like, Blur and the Pet Shop Boys? Or?
No, just one of them is gay. As
right. Wait, it may have been a media sham, but the lead singer, Blur, was actually living with former Elastica hottie Justine Frischmann.
Shameless.
I don't know who that is.
You know, I have a comment for our straight fellow here.
Yeah.
A lot of my straight friends, you know, are way into young women, like 18-year-old women. Mm. But women are physically mature at 18. I mean, I
see that. Well, see, that's different.
Lucky
too,
us, I guess.
Well, no, because I'm actually living with.
That is so not true.
That's not true at all.
Because I dated my girlfriend from the first round. I actually started dating her when she was 14, and then through to 17, and then started dating her again at 20, and then to 22. And her body is very different, very different. Women kind of just settle into their hips in their early 20s. They get, like, that baby
women
preparation
settle.
Thing.
Mm.
So I don't
an
know
old
when
house.
Just kind of collapse. No. Yeah. I mean, women kind of just become more Rubenesque, I would say.
Rubenesque?
Yeah, unless they're starving themselves.
I was interested briefly in getting back to something that DJ Badass mentioned earlier, that you don't agree with the idea of a monogamous relationship.
Well,
that's something that raised a flag with me. Because
it's not
I'm,
really a relationship, then.
I don't think that a relationship is a real relationship if it's not a monogamous relationship. I have a very hard time with that. And yet again, that's another stereotype that I can't stand, that even if a gay person is in a relationship, that means they can still go off. They still do go off and do whatever they want with whoever else they want to do it with.
Well, I think what you're creating is what we in philosophers call a false dichotomy. And that is, you know, my relationship is really 99.9% monogamous. But I just don't feel it's morally appropriate for me to say, okay, you know, for the rest of our lives, for as long as we're together, you can never have sex with anyone, even if Jonathan Taylor Thomas comes over tomorrow and says, like,
good
God. Yeah, okay, do me.
Can we please use another example?
Right. Anything.
So,
anyone.
Emilio Estevez. Something. You know?
Dom DeLuise. Anything but Jonathan Taylor Thomas, please.
So, no, it's not a matter of, like, going out to the clubs, like, every night and doing everything you can find. It's just, like, you know, if there's an extraordinary, exceptional circumstance, I'm not going to prevent you from, like, achieving your fantasy sex goal.
Well, this is interesting to me as well because, again, from the outside looking in, I get the impression that a larger number of gay couples have sort of open
relationships, exactly,
than straight couples. Does that seem to be true?
I feel the same way, and it bothers me.
Yeah.
I think it is actually true. It's not true for us. You know, I think monogamy is good for us.
I hope.
Mm-hmm. You know, for as long as we're together.
Well, it's also, it's extremely unsafe. I mean,
exactly.
I mean, like,
that's right.
Straight out. I mean, yes, it's unsafe in a straight relationship too. But I mean, in a gay relationship, the stakes are even higher.
I could count on two hands the number of people I know who are in a quote unquote monogamous relationship who got AIDS from a partner who they thought they were monogamous with.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, case in point. It's just, I mean, if it's not just the commitment thing alone. I mean, the fact that you have to be, I mean, you better be doubling up on the condoms, basically.
That's right.
Well, there is a very real practical danger.
Yes.
But,
exactly.
But, I mean, let's think about it in principle. I mean, there seems to be something going on in principle here, right? I don't know. I mean, I don't know what it is. Maybe gay men have an easier time separating out sex from love in a way that's right. I don't know. I mean, I'm just.
It's just because they're men, and men are taught to think they like to screw around.
You mean I don't actually like to screw around?
But people can make that decision.
I'd be happy to hear that.
Can we talk about something a little bit more fun? I'm
like, oh, come on.
I'm getting depressed.
Getting sad.
Do you have a suggestion?
Taylor Andrew. Jonathan Taylor Thomas?
No.
Well, one thing I meant to mention earlier was when we were talking about how it's easier to come out in the 90s than it was in the 70s and 80s. I think one of the things that seems to me is that even in small towns now, at least there are some reasonable media stereotypes, right? Where if you go back to sort of the 70s and you watch TV, right, there's sort of no one who says, I'm gay, and it's sort of okay, right? Mm-hmm. But now, you know, you've had Ellen, you've got Will and Grace now, you've got characters much more prominent in movies.
Right.
You've got movies playing in art houses that are about gay relationships.
You have movies playing in major motion pictures that are about people being gay.
You have the Thomas Ripley movie.
Yeah.
Every sitcom has one gay character, Who never gets a date?
Except Will and Grace.
Yeah, Will and Grace.
Right. Did you watch it today? It was really good.
No. I don't think, going back to what you said, I don't think it will ever be necessarily easy for anybody to come out. I don't think the process of coming out will ever be easy for anybody. I think, you know, in terms of coming out to yourself or coming out to your family or your friends, but I think that coming out and being accepted is going to be a lot easier. But the actual process of coming out will probably always be a difficult emotional process.
I think until, it'll at least take one more generation for it to be a lot easier. I mean, anyone who comes out now to their parents, they're going to have some stigmatism with
it. It'll be hard.
It will be hard.
I haven't even done it yet.
You know,
thank God my parents still live in Pittsburgh.
My parents were the easiest people to come out to.
Well, unless you have gay parents already.
Right.
I forgot to make the exception.
You're probably the only one.
I've
never in my entire experience heard of anything that fortunate.
I had a decent coming out story. I mean, my grandma just... She's still like, oh, do you have a, quote, friend or whatever?
You know, but my family's oblivious. I lived with my mechanic for 11 months and invited him to Thanksgiving dinner.
Well,
my
mechanic. About car problems.
That's right.
Got to fix that muffin.
Right. He gave great lube jobs, but...
Oh.
I was waiting for that.
So, how long have you been with your older boyfriend?
Okay, hang on. 621-9728. Please call in with your questions, comments, and concerns.
Somebody call in. Good God.
621-9728.
You don't have to be gay to call in.
But it helps.
It makes it more fun.
No,
you'll get pushed up to the top of the switchboard.
Andrew, how long have you been with your old boyfriend?
There's no call. I was actually in a relationship for a year and a half with an older man. And then, actually, every time I go back to St. Louis now, I date the same man.
I find it a lot easier to be involved with people who are older.
Definitely.
Because I think there's a stigma of drama in the gay world, and I think the younger you are, the more that stigma follows you. But I think the older you get, that drama seems to fade. The curtain seems to close a little bit. And
can I ask what that means, the stigma of drama?
It's a really difficult question to answer.
I'm to the point now that I'm sick of going out to the clubs. I'm sick of... You know, drinking, you know, whatever, hooking up, whatever. I'm sick of that. And, you know.
We're going to interrupt you. I would like to actually probe your needs a little bit further.
Probe your what?
We've got a caller on the phone who'd like to share his or her thoughts with us. So is the caller in the air? Hello, caller.
Hi. Actually, I was talking with my housemates, and we were discussing the perceived higher level of promiscuity among gay culture. And I was wondering if you guys could address that, and maybe if you think it's the case, give some reasons for it.
Excellent.
I think, honestly, I'll go first on this one. I think a lot of gay men are very insecure, and that by getting sex or going to a club and flirting and stuff like that, that they have instantaneous either popularity or when they hook up and they look at the person next to them, they don't remember who
it's hollow gratification.
Definitely.
It's useful.
When they hook up and they look at the person next to them, they don't remember who
it's
it is.
It's hollow gratification.
Definitely.
It's useless. It's like picking out on cheesecake and then feeling like crap about it the next morning.
Once you come, it's over with.
Oh.
Do you really think it's like that, though? Because let's look at least reputation-wise, gay men versus gay women, right?
Oh, yeah.
I think
I mean, clearly there does seem to be a very, like, if you look at the way gay women are, at least reputationally, versus the way gay men are, there seems to be something really going on about the fact that gay men are men.
I think the difference
is... That's my sister's theory, that, you know, you put one man and another man together, and boom, horn fest.
Well, I think an important way...
Right.
I think an important way to look at, to analyze the gay man in this respect, is to run the gay man...
My housemate just heard it on the radio, sorry.
I think it's important... In this subject and in a lot of others, to run the situation between gay men parallel to heterosexual men. Because, I mean, there are just as many heterosexual men who are extremely promiscuous.
Right.
I think they're just less willing partners, though. I think there's more turn down of heterosexual men going, hey, baby, let's hook up, whereas...
I mean, God knows in my case,
I mean, right. You know, but with guys, it's like, yeah, well, you know, sure, why not?
I guess you eliminate the risk of pregnancy, too.
I think a lot of people. Gay men are very blunt and to the point, and they know exactly, like, they know they're going to want to go get laid. And you see someone across the room or the club, you look at them, and you know that you're most likely there for the same reason, and you just go do it.
But that's another good way to think about it. Think about it this way. Heterosexual men heterosexual people have all the time in the world, have every situation, at work, at home, in class, anywhere, to meet someone, find someone. But gay men, if you're in an environment that isn't necessarily gay-friendly, you have, if you go to the club, you have 1 hour of every week to find someone to be interested in. That's all you have. That's all you have. That's your one time to ever find anyone that you'd, you know, be able to be involved with. And so it kind of compresses everything and makes things go a little faster. You don't have as much of an opportunity for selection or for pickiness, I think. And maybe that's a little sad, but unfortunately it's the case.
I think it also just sort of needs to be said here. I mean, I hate to be Satan's little advocate for the voice of promiscuity, but, you know, I mean, I don't think you can really argue from a philosophically, you know, from philosophical axioms that promiscuity is bad. I mean, if you view having sex with your people who are generally nice, I mean, if you view having sex with others as some kind of sport or, you know, way to spend your time in a pleasurable way, you know, so long as it's not especially degrading, I don't think you can argue that there's anything wrong with it.
But it's a stigma, and it's a stigma that, as much as I can think of, has always been a negative one. I mean, if you hear about someone who sleeps with a lot of people or who involves himself with a lot of people, I mean, maybe it sounds cool, maybe it sounds fun, but part of you also looks at that as a little bit trashy.
Well, maybe, but among the straight community, at least among men, right? Like,
well, this country's always been quite puritanical. I mean, I grew up in the hippie end of the late 60s and 70s, and I was taught to believe by men and women that sex is a fine, fun, cool thing to do, and it's okay to do a lot if you want. And, you know, I was not that successful, but I don't
I
feel
the difference.
Oh, excuse me.
Oh,
way many more partners than I have.
It's almost, but you know, this is, it's almost a subject that's, because you can't discuss promiscuity without discussing the risk of, there are too many dangers attached to it, and...
Does the caller need to say something?
Oh, hey, well, no, go ahead, but I do have another question.
Oh, go ahead.
This is, as a straight woman on campus, my question is, well, there is a perception that CMU is a really great place to be for gay people, and that it's a lot safer of an environment than a lot of other ones. I wonder if you agree with this, and also what you would say about opportunities we have available here at CMU. Do they seem like a lot, or do they quickly...
The worst thing.
It is a small place.
I'll take this one.
Go
the
first.
The worst thing about the CMU population is that, okay, yes, there is a high gay population, but the whole 6 degrees of separation at CMU between the gay culture, it's like the 2 degrees of separation.
That's like, really true.
And then you have the whole issue of you're not supposed to date your friend's boyfriend.
And if you can't date,
right?
If you can't date your friend's boyfriend, you can't date right. Your friend. You can't date anyone.
That's the. It's an interesting trade-off because in a way you can say yes, and I think that in a way that's very fortunate because we do go to a very gay-friendly school. I mean, the College of Fine Arts is, I hate to stereotype, but crawling with gay men. And it's a place where you can feel comfortable being yourself. And I've never once on this campus felt threatened by my sexuality, felt uncomfortable with it. But I think what Andy said is a really valid point, is that it's a bubble that's easy to get stuck in. And even if you don't involve yourself with that many people, before you know it, you have sexual connections with almost every single gay man on this campus.
And
you see, and you sit next to them in class, and you eat across from them, you know, and it's...
And we all talk about each other.
And we talk about each other, yeah. You know, I think Andy and I probably know everything about every gay man on this campus.
That's right.
And they know,
that's the key question. Lance brings up an interesting point. You know, I am an enigma to you. You know nothing about me sexually, so aren't you just like...
I know that you're pretty desperate for it.
Aren't you just
like... Literally like Jonathan Taylor Thomas.
Aren't you aching right. You have no... you have no connection to my...
You're like a
sexual
Gilligan's Island.
Exactly. I'm in like an infinite pleasure dome that you have like never visited.
But you have a boyfriend, so to me you're automatically out.
Oh, right, you are out of bounds for us.
And this like this, I have to
balls in your court, buddy.
I have to object to this unsafe thing. Like if
always
I,
forever.
Like, let's say you know I met some like I mean like I don't think that this notion of equating sex with danger is actually a false one. I think it's perfectly possible to have you know sex that's as safe as riding a bus, right? I mean.
Not
but the difference is the odds are you're not going to die riding a bus. I mean, there's a possibility, but the thing is, think about how much...
No, I mean literally that. I mean, with the appropriate use of condoms and so on, your risk can be made appropriately low.
But the risk is it's a paralyzing, petrifying emotional risk.
There's also a social risk that goes with it.
Anyways, yeah, Colin, we strayed a bit from your question.
I actually had something else.
No, would you guys mind? That's my last question. I'm going to listen to the rest of the show, but it's easier on the radio than on the phone.
That's fine.
So I think I'll sign out and listen to what you guys have to say.
We love you.
Nice
Thank
job.
You very much.
Thank you.
I had one thing to add to her last question, because I went to CMU for 4 years, from 92 to 96, and was on the swim team for all four of those
Woo-hoo!
Years. Yeah, well, I came out at graduation, basically, to avoid basically the stigma that would have been coming out on the swim team, because the swim team was an extremely homophobic group of people, as were most of the athletic programs.
But you're involving yourself in an athletic program at
the
school,
yes,
which
exactly
right.
But it's I do want to add. The
I
fact
think this. That, I'm sorry. I don't want to interrupt you. Our callers always come first in this program, and it looks
oh,
like we've got young.
That's fine.
Color.
But it just I maybe they've gotten better, but it was a problem.
We'll get back to you. I
what?
Promise. Is the caller on the air? Hello, caller.
Yeah, right here.
Oh, thanks so much for calling. Did you have a question, comment, or concern to share with us and the viewing audience?
I suppose it's question/comment. Yeah, I mean, I'm curious to hear the viewpoint of those who are on the show right now.
Let's hear it.
It's regarding the issue of choice in homosexuality, okay? Being myself a homosexual, it enrages me when I'm looking at an application to, a certain university referred to in general by those who I run into. Why do you choose this lifestyle? Why would you, you know what I'm saying? And I was curious what it does for you, the gay man on the show, to hear these things. And what does it say to you about the people that express homosexuality as a choice?
First of all, the whole word lifestyle is a manufactured term by people.
It's also a brand of condoms.
I mean, gay people will use it, but I think it is more often abused by, say, organizations like the Wall Street Journal and people like Tom DeLay and people who talk about the cure for homosexuality.
Yes.
There is no real gay lifestyle. I mean, there are things that gay people do. There are things that straight people do. There are things that, you know, black people do and white people do. And if we call everything a lifestyle, it's just another way of throwing up a barrier. So immediately, anytime somebody refers to the gay lifestyle, I immediately discount them and just like, you know.
Yeah,
well, I think this is – I worked last year where I live back home. I worked in an office, and in the office it was a medical office, and I worked with three female doctors. Two of the three female doctors had been married to a man and had children, and their husbands had – ultimately come out and said they were gay, left them with two children. And I think when somebody comes out and asks why you choose this lifestyle, you kind of have to look at something like that and say, well, it's almost better to accept and choose the lifestyle and make the choice for yourself rather than hide the lifestyle and then wind up going off and causing the emotional damage and heartbreaking problems that you're going to cause by hiding your lifestyle. And granted, you're right. Lifestyle is a synthesized word that is a very – it's a nice way to encapsulate something, but it's very hard to do that. And I think – I guess pretty much what it all boils down to is just being yourself, and I guess that's what they're trying to refer to by lifestyle.
Exactly.
Well, I mean, you'd hope that the lifestyle would refer to that, but it usually gets used as a code word for something negative about being gay, right, with by –
You never hear about a heterosexual lifestyle.
Right.
That's
yeah.
very
Tell
true.
Tell me how often that comes up.
Well, there is no such thing as either. I'm going to take the opposite. I agree with what you guys have said, but I'll take the opposite just so it will be said.
Devil's advocate.
Devil's advocate. In that you need to cut straight people a lot of slack because they've grown up in a homophobic culture themselves, and they haven't been forced to deal with it very often until they meet you. And
in a way, it's kind of funny.
It can be an innocent or a semi-innocent question. Why do you choose to be gay? You know, I believe you choose what you do. I mean, it is your choice of who your partner is. You don't choose what you like.
Of course not. right. anything else.
Right. You know, you don't choose your favorite color, but you do choose the color of your clothing.
Right, and I completely agree with that.
That's a really good point.
And sort of amplify Jeff's point, I think actually, you know, when you hear about these kind of this Simon LeVay thing about gay men have, what is it, smaller hypothalamuses.
Smaller
larger
what?
Penises.
And you have these...
Right. Is that a code word?
And also, you know, you see these toy studies...
We compensate for that.
You know, there are biologists looking into the genetic causes of homosexuality, and while as a sophisticated, very attractive gay man, you know, you can...
He's talking about me.
Like me.
Right.
You can object to that, and you can say, well, you know, why are people looking into the genetic causes of homosexuality? I think at this point in our development, in society's development, it's actually really helpful for people to say, oh, I get it. That's not their fault. They were born that way. That's actually really helpful.
Well,
right
there's, sort of a, there's sort of a Scylla and Charybdis situation here, right? Because on the political right, for a long time, pushed for the idea of homosexuality as a choice that people could back off from. And then, but the other thing is, if the research, Simon LeVay's research, is very motivated by pro-gay politics, right, shows that there are genetic and biological correlates with homosexuality, right, then there's the idea that you could intervene in the womb and do something about it, right?
But it's just...
So sort of no matter what situation turns out to be the case, it will be able to be tweaked for both sort of anti-gay and pro-gay.
I don't mean to run a huge parallel, and I know I've mentioned this already, but if you look at it in terms of the black population, scientists and people who study genetics would be able to sit down and tell you why some people are born black. And that's pretty straightforward and pretty clean cut, and there's a pretty direct answer for that question, why somebody would be born black. But that still doesn't make racial tension disappear. That doesn't make black prejudice disappear. Mm-hmm. So I think even if you come out and a genetic scientist came out and said, I've found out why it is that somebody would be gay, I don't think that's necessarily going to help heterosexual people understand or help them.
For the gay population,
right.
The whole choice, like you choose who to have sex with, you don't choose who you're attracted to. Mm. You know?
Well, there is one sort of pop culture idea that it does dispel, which is the old idea of gay men are just sort of horny and it's the easiest way for them to get sex. Right?
And they're right.
To a degree.
No, but there is this sort of shallow idea of choice that the genetic research, which is reasonably well backed up by now, does sort of point away from. So it creates its own, you know, hornet's nest of problems, but, you know, that's a whole other show probably.
Pretty much.
So, caller, is that a...
Yeah, I'd say that's well
addressed. So, I just have a follow-up question. Have you been listening to the show for a while?
Yeah, I've been listening to the whole thing.
I mean, in general, do you have recurrent sexual fantasies about me?
Just say yes. You'll save yourself a phone call.
Just voice, agree. You know,
he'll stalk you.
you should
they have call. They have caller ID.
Yeah, there's caller ID on here.
Okay, I mean...
just agree.
One more question, really quickly. I'd just like to get your slant on this.
Yes, I'm single and available.
Do you have my phone number?
That wasn't the question.
Okay, caller, you need to make it quick because we've got a second caller who's urgently...
We only have a couple minutes, so...
Okay, well, I was just curious as to whether Mr. Pischel, perhaps he could address this.
I don't think I ever said my last name.
Oh, well, yes, you did. It's the beginning of the program.
Okay, fine.
Do you think perhaps the homosexual promiscuity issue, which people refer to constantly, which has become the stereotype, which, as you said before, stereotypes come from some sort of truth.
All I have to say is no comment and ask Mr. Bernardi.
Okay, well, that wasn't my question. My question was...
Caller 2?
That the homosexual behavior in general, of the homosexual promiscuity, do you think that exposes basic human instinctual desires that isn't necessarily unique to male sex? I mean, that I don't know. It seems to me to expose both male and female desires on a more...
Yes, if I'm horny, I'm horny.
I think what it boils down to is some people are more horny than others. Gay, yeah. Straight, into guys, girls, sheep, anything. You're more horny than somebody else.
If women were, I mean, like, if women really work the same way as men, I don't think lesbian relationships would work in the way that they seem to work differently than gay-male relationships.
Okay, next.
I hate to be abrupt, but caller number one, thank you for calling.
Okay.
I'm going to actually switch to caller number two quickly because we've got 1 minute left, and so we want to quickly get in the final comment of the evening. Thank you so much for calling. Caller two, are you on the air?
Mm-hmm.
Hello,
caller
two.
Caller two.
No, it doesn't sound like caller two is going to
be.
Oh,
no. Caller one, call back.
This is a perfect analogy.
Call back right now.
Perfect analogy to my own sexual relationship. It's always like...
Hold on 1 second.
Oh. Okay, hello. So,
Wait, we
ask
have
a question. Make it quick.
Hello.
Yes.
Hi.
Hi. I was calling because I have a gay friend, and we're really close. And it seems as though every time, like, we all get together and there's drinking or something going on, he always seems to, like, want to tell everybody that he's straight. And I was just wondering if, like, anyone had any insight.
I'll take this call. Okay. I think it can depend. You said your friend is gay, and when he becomes drunk, pretends to be straight.
Yes.
He's probably gay and just afraid of it. That's the way I'd look at it.
You don't think he's straight?
No, I think I mean people talk about reverse closet cases, people who are gay, but then when they're drunk, pretend to be straight. I mean, I'll tell you the truth, that I'm 100% USDA approved gay, and that when I get drunk.
Boy, you know, I actually with the kind of. Personnel shortage in the USDA. I didn't realize that they were actually.
They have. They. I am stamped and shipped. I am
he's
completely
grade
gay.
A.
I am grade A, and
I'm
I.
Supposed to talk about being
right.
Grade D.
I think that that's probably just an alcohol-induced phenomenon.
Do you
that,
think it's somewhat of like denial?
Does
like,
he hit on you when he's drunk?
It definitely. That's a queen and.
Grope women's
that's a.
Drunk.
Yeah. That is a. That is a queen in definite denial.
Sometimes
that's
he does.
A, that,
yeah.
He probably wears women's underwear.
That is a complete denial thing. I'll tell you that right now.
He's gay.
Why do I think?
Yeah.
Well, because, I mean, that's what he tells us.
He's gay. He is gay. You wouldn't make a jump like that in society and tell people
right.
You're gay after years and years and years of being in the closet and worrying about
with?
It.
Does he have sex with?
Well, I really don't think he's ever completely had sex with a man before, but he has been intimate with men.
Okay. Well,
I would maybe be presumptuous and make the jump that he is gay, but I can understand that idea of being gay. But when you get drunk, just being closer and more fun with women, and maybe hiding behind a little bit after having a few.
Why are gay men not fun when they're drunk?
Maybe when he's drunk, his insecurities kind of overtaken.
Or maybe he's just bi. You never know.
No, I'd be more inclined. I mean, if this is somebody that you're expressing an interest in, I'd save your good underwear for another night because he's not going straight for you anytime.
I can't think of a better way to end the show.
When I haven't been interested. He's just a really good friend.
Well that's good. Yeah. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. I just feel like as, you know, a scientist, as a PhD in training, the proper way to address this scenario is to actually do a scientific experiment. I think you and I and your friend should all get wasted together, and then we'll see, you know, what develops.
But,
you know, if you're left, like, making tea or kind of...
But DJ Badass, she's a young, presumably under 22 woman. Wouldn't,
and you're not...
Wouldn't Andrew be the proper gay control person?
That
for
is because right.
Because Andrew's...
Who's your friend? Who are you?
You're leaving Tom here in the dark.
Blah,
blah, blah.
DJ Badass is 6'3", tanned, green eyes.
I'm like, you know,
28-inch waist.
You have cataracts.
28-inch what?
You're older than 38, let me tell you that. Because your eyes are going.
You don't understand. I'm like badass and super hot. I know how to. Unlike you, DJ Andrew, who only knows how to receive pleasure. I know how to give pleasure to another man.
I only receive and let,
I will, I will, I will, I will, I will, I will, I will vouch for Andrew. Andrew does know how to give pleasure.
Anyways, on that note,
something in it for him.
I think we're running out of time.
That's the older man thing.
Oh, we didn't go to Station ID, WRCT Pittsburgh.
So, caller.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Love you.
Thank you.
We're going over time.
Hope you enjoyed the show.
Final comments?
And, final comments?
Time for just final round of comments.
We got to go. I don't know what our producer thinks. What does our producer say? We got to go? We got to cut it off. Thanks.
Do we have another minute or two? Okay, we've got another minute or two.
I'm sorry.
Please request that Tom and Andrew come back to the show as much as possible. Because we have a lot of fun.
Really?
Okay. Yeah.
So could we do a nude show, like, next week, you think?
I mean, yeah, for radio, that's just great. Yeah.
Right. I guess I'd agree to that. Just give me a week in the gym.
Yeah.
Well, I just wanted to say, because I don't know if this was part of the theme of this show anyway, but I was going to say, as a younger person who's dating an older man, I will highly attest that those younger people out there interested in dating older men should avoid the stigma and don't believe that they're going to be sluggish in bed, because they're not.
Not at all.
And
sluggish?
Exactly.
Not even, I don't know what that word means.
But neither are young people.
Exactly. Yeah, neither are young people.
Right.
We got it going on, too.
But just if you love somebody, go for it, and that's that.
Speaking of which, if you're single tonight,
love has no age boundary.
That's right.
If you're in love with someone, they look beautiful even when they're being disgusting.
Or if you're drunk.
A stitch in time saves nine.
I don't understand how it relates, DJ Badass, but...
I don't quilt or stitch.
Right.
A hand on the bird is worth two up the bush.
Yeah. We don't talk about bushes on this show. Yeah. I'm sorry.
Okay. Well, with that, thank you very much, listeners. This has been Sex Talk. Be sure to check us out next Tuesday.
And on the web.
Tuesday at 11.
And what about the website? No one ever has